Welcome to Hallway Transgressions. I'm Chris.
I'm Ryan.
We are two private school alumni, and this podcast serves to examine the worldviews of Christian pastors and teachers through a postmodern lens. Oh, wait, was that the wrong? That was the wrong one. That was the wrong one.
Damn.
We layered them on top of each other.
Yeah, we have like three in one spot, don't we? Which one? Highlight the right one.
You know what? I'm keeping it. This is a funny gag.
Sure.
Ryan, what's your bright spot?
Well, this is gonna be a bit of a shameless plug, but I have started writing. It's been something I've like wanted to do. I've done like journaling in the past just for myself, but I've gotten encouragement to make some of my writing and perspective more public, so I've started something I had never heard of called a Substack. It's this website where basically it says it's for like email newsletters and whatnot. And when I think newsletter, I usually think like marketing and whatnot. But it's got definitely a more of a like blog feel, at least to mine it does. And I've seen some other people's. It's just a way for people to write and not really have to battle against an algorithm of getting something to show up on social media. Since if people subscribe, it just goes straight to their email. So if you are interested in reading any of my stuff, it's at deconstructandreconstruct.substack.com. And there I've just gotten started. I have like, I think four on there, and I'm starting a schedule of getting one posted every Tuesday and Friday. So if you're interested in getting my perspective or just like getting, it's basically just perspective how I think. I'm not really saying it's the right way to think or anything like that, but I thought it would just be interesting to talk about things that come into my mind and hear other people's thoughts and ideas on those same topics. How about you, Chris?
Yeah. I really appreciate your, just your four issues now, but I think you do a really good job of blending in anecdotes from your life, like in school and like around school, like not just Lakewood, but more so your college years, and blending it in with topics that are interesting and, you know, thoughts that you think about outside of that. And so I've been really enjoying it.
Yeah, I kind of try to stay away from high school. A lot of my journey started in college and these different thought processes. And so I kind of am wanting to gear it more around that, kind of more of a philosophical rather than religious types of talks. Like I will definitely include stuff about religion because, I mean, that is my background. That's where this all started, where my journey started and all of this stuff. So that's definitely there. But I do kind of want more of a tone of just thinking about life and perspectives on what life is and how we can look at it and how we can look at other people and our existence and our experiences. So yeah, I try to stick with where those thoughts kind of started for me.
Yeah. And it's definitely worth checking out if you like Ryan. I know he's a polarizing character on the podcast, so.
And if you don't, tell me the things I'm wrong about. Go for it. I would love to hear what my assumptions are, because, you know, sometimes it's hard to identify your own. So if you hate me, go on there, point stuff out, try to nitpick. I'm for it. How about you, Chris? What's your bright spot?
So we don't really have a recording schedule, so people might not have noticed that we're on a little bit of a hiatus. It's because I packed up all my stuff and moved to Chicago. So I'm finally here. I finally settled in. I'm feeling good. I'm enjoying the city. I'm just having a great time with hanging out with friends that are are up here. And, you know, just been hanging out and enjoying the city.
Yeah. What has been your highlight so far of Chicago? I know it's only been, what, like a few days? But what's the best thing about it so far for you?
I think the best thing, like, is just being able to just commute in different ways. Like, that was a big thing that I was frustrated about in my life, was like whenever I wanted to do something, I had to drive, and like I don't like suburbia. I just don't feel like I'm built for suburbia. Not a big fan of driving just to like go to the grocery store. So like today, for example, I needed some ingredients for dinner I was cooking tonight, and so I just walked to the grocery store and picked it up and just walked back. Like, it's just so nice to just like walk somewhere or bike somewhere or take the elevated train, the L. Like, when I go and visit people who are up north a little more, I just, you know, tap my phone, get on the train, and then, you know, get where I'm going. And I just enjoy the different ways to commute and just the density of the city, all the different options I have, and just also food. Just I keep spending too much money on food I've never had, and it's just all so good.
Yeah, good thing you don't smoke. Don't have to buy those $15 packs of cigarettes.
Well, I guess that is one of the many blessings of not smoking, I guess.
It'd be expensive in Chicago.
Are they that bad? I didn't even know.
I think it was around, like, for, like, American Spirits, which is more, like, pricier ones. Around here, it's, like, $7 or $8. I think when I was there, it was, like, 13, 14, or, like, $15, like, somewhere in there.
Dang. Oh, yeah. You're right.
Yeah, so that's good.
Wow. Yeah, almost $17.
Yeah, there's, who knows, it might be more now. That was a while ago. That was in college, last time I looked at cigarettes.
Yeah, I'm looking at a product page right now. It's $16.78.
Oh my god. Yeah, smoking there is definitely a pricier hobby to have. So today we have another interview among our series of interviews. This one, I think, is the first one that's not Becca. But we brought on a mutual friend from our past, farther into Chris's past, but he was a friend of ours from like Leo, Cedarville, Indiana, in that area. We went to school with him. At least I went there, or I was in school with him for like a year. Chris had been with him for a while, but this was a guy that we had actually had, like, sure, like, they were childish, but we had, like, theological, in quotes, theological debates with him and discussions at that point in time. So it was fun to get to talk to him, get his perspectives now, because as you can see, we're a bit different from when we were, like, in middle school and high school. So it was fun to get his perspectives now over years that, I mean, I hadn't talked to him in a long time. So it was really cool.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was really cool of, like, getting, I guess, spoiler alerts of the upcoming episode, but he is still religious, and it was interesting to talk to someone who had such different life experiences than us in multiple different ways, but still being able to serve his community. And anyway, just because I know with the Becca interviews, Becca was deconstructing more in our vein. So I think it was really interesting to talk to someone who almost deconstructed, but their reconstruction was more in the vein of staying religious. I thought that was interesting to bring someone on and have a nice chat. And he has a really, really reverence for the Bible as a holy scripture that I really appreciated him talking about. And he's also a Hebrew nerd.
Yeah, what a nerd. No, but also for those of you that think deconstruction is like, or not think, but deconstruction is a trigger word for you or something of the sort, you can deconstruct within a religion. Mm-hmm. You can identify your beliefs, really dig into them, see where they came from and everything. And that doesn't mean that you're going to, like, lose your faith or anything of that sort. Like, I consider deconstruction to be a good thing across the board, and it's useful within a religion as well.
Yeah. Thanks for, that's what I was trying to say. Thanks for piecing those thoughts together.
Yeah. Because I think deconstruction is turning into almost a taboo word of sorts within at least, like, conservative Christianity. There's a lot of talk of deconstruction and progressive Christianity and all these words becoming, like, just inherently bad. Like, you might not even know what they mean, and yet you have negative feelings towards them. So I just want to say, I mean, I guess it's not coming from a reputable source for those people, those people, I don't know, for those leaning that way. But that's just what I think. I think it's good to really know what you believe. I mean, we were told all the time, like, figure out what you believe, learn what you believe. Don't just believe what people tell you. Like, that was told us, and who knows if they actually meant it. But if you want to do that, you're going to have to dig into a lot of the stuff that, if you grew up within Christianity, was ingrained into you, in which it's really easy to believe certain things and not really know why anymore. So that's kind of the point of deconstruction, is to figure out why you believe the things that you do.
Yeah. Yeah. And so with that, please enjoy our interview with Nate.
Hey, everybody. We are back, and we do have a very special guest on our show. Name is Nate. Welcome to the show, Nate.
Hi, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. So we've been going through kind of like a series of having interviews and stuff with people coming on our podcast. I think it's really cool and fun to have some different voices on here, not just Chris and I. So I'm really glad that you came on. And hopefully we can get more people. If you want to be on our show, hit us up at hey@hallwaytransgressions.com. That's right, Chris, right? That's
yeah,
the
yeah,
name.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool. What you said last time, so.
H-E-Y.
H-E-Y, not H-A-Y. Anyways, so first off, Nate, just tell us a little bit about yourself, like your upbringing, like kind of what like your family was like and what school was like growing up for you.
That is a huge question.
I know. You get to include whatever you want.
So growing up, I grew up in a very Christian family. I have a long line of ancestors who were pastors or who did all sorts of different things. My dad himself was a missionary because he originally wanted to one-up my grandfather, his dad. But that was a huge portion of my life. So we lived in Honduras for 6 years, from when I was 2 to when I was 8. And then when I was 8, we moved to Indiana. At that point in time, I knew nothing about American culture. And so I remember the very first recess I had in third grade was walking around the playground by myself because I had no clue what to do. And so I mean that kind of persisted, but I did eventually make friends. But growing up in Indiana through high school, and then I went to public school, so I guess I got a better education than you guys did.
Definitely.
But when I graduated, I went to college initially for youth ministry, because I thought that's what I wanted to do, and then realized I really, really, really hated public speaking and still do. But I then transitioned to counseling because what I really wanted to do was to create that like relationship with like teenagers, because having gone through that tumultuous time, I thought, oh, this will be a great place for me to be. And I didn't want to be a pastor, so that was a better option. You know, I had to carry on the family line of being pastors. But I graduated with my counseling degree. I started a master's, and then realized that counseling, what I wanted to do with counseling, is just it's not really feasible within the actual field. And then realizing that I would probably come home every day carrying those problems, and I already deal with depression. I really don't need others on top of that, or at least professionally others on top of that. And so I decided to quit that. I did a year that I was going to work for a mental health place to see if that changed my mind, to see if I really enjoyed it still, and found I hated it more than I could have imagined at the time. I worked for a mental health facility, a community mental health facility. And so primarily I was working with mostly adults, but some children, on teaching what they call essential skills. Essentially, it's just trying to help them live in our society as it is. And I loved the clients. I hated the job itself. I hated the people, or at least my supervisor at the time. I hated the fact that if I didn't get the exact amount of hours I needed, I was going to get docked pay. Most of my clients were court ordered. And so of course they don't want to go through this. This is a waste of their time. And so it was difficult to get anybody to actually meet with me to even work with them to help them learn these skills. A lot of them were really resistant to that. And so I just found I was working 60, 70 hour weeks, getting paid for 30 hours, and then just running myself ragged. And since then I got fired from that, but got fired from that job and then started working in IT. And I've since found a job that I'm very happy with.
Awesome. Yeah. So you were wanting to focus mainly on like younger aged, like not necessarily children, but you were saying teenagers. That's what your initial idea was.
Yeah. Yeah. Specifically with youth ministry, because I knew I really didn't want to do like actual preaching, because I knew I hated public speaking from the get-go. I was like, I can teach though. That's different. But I also found I hated that too. But yeah, so my initial was just the connection with the students. I had a really good relationship with my youth minister. And so I wanted to carry that on for hopefully embody that for other kids. But I'm kind of glad I didn't do that.
Yeah.
But my wife does now. So
yeah, that's what I heard.
I get to volunteer and have fun with that rather than having all of the responsibility of these kids.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, if you were volunteering at the same church?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I help her with just about everything she does. I went on the mission trip this summer. The only thing I can't really help with is stuff that happens like while I'm still working. And she has one program that that they do while I'm still working.
Cool.
Yeah, I really enjoy it. I love working with the kids. I'm glad I don't have the responsibility of these kids' Christian life. If they even want to be a Christian, there's a lot of questions with that. It's hard to wrestle with.
Sure. So, I mean, I don't know how deep we want to get into stuff or anything, but when it comes to volunteering there and when it comes to Christian belief and whatnot, are you more on the side of not necessarily evangelizing the kids or just letting them figure stuff out, answering questions? How do you kind of approach it?
Our approach in particular, when my wife and I were discussing this, we've been dating since we were freshmen in college and since then. And so not as long as you guys have, but we have done a lot of growing up together. And so a lot of our philosophy and our deals are the same because we grew up with worrisome situations. But from us, our main philosophy when it comes to youth ministry is that we want to provide the skills and the resources necessary for these students to develop their own faith. We don't want to teach them particular things that they are supposed to know. We don't want to teach them one particular idea of how the Bible works. We're very intentional with trying to be open with it because we both, the college we went to was very much the same way. They very much taught that even though they were a Church of Christ school, they didn't necessarily teach that as gospel. We learned about all sorts of different philosophies about the Bible. And so with that, we wanted to carry that on for the kids because we value an actual personal relationship with Christianity more than we do a indoctrinated, brainwashed idea of Christianity. We want the kids to have their own faith.
Do you think we went through a indoctrination brainwashing?
Well, not Ryan. I had to put my finger on.
Yeah, because... It's interesting because I only really had one type of experience with youth group, which was County Line. I think I was in kindergarten when we started going to County Line, and it was 100, 200 people there at the time. And now it's thousands, and they have satellite churches and whatnot. So it's been kind of crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I went there when I was very young and just went up through the youth group as it got bigger and bigger. And it was always centered towards this whole idea of discipleship and training us to stick with Christianity. You can see how well that turned out. But they still kind of give that idea of just trying to get your kids to stay Christians. I feel their goal. Is that not what you experienced? That's not the kind of vibe you got going through youth group growing up?
For me, I don't know. It's hard to say. I was the youth minister's pet. I was the intern for a couple of years actually with him when I was in high school. And trying to think back to his teachings, that's not what sticks out to me, unfortunately. Because he did a great job from what I remember. But honestly, it was almost certainly geared more towards keeping your faith was more important than anything else. And for me, what actually made me stick with it was more the relationship I have with my youth minister. 95% of the positive impact I got out of my youth group was the personal relationship I had with my youth minister. And so that's what we try to embody more than anything else, because we know lessons fade. I can't remember a single lesson I got from my youth minister, but I do remember the relationship I had.
I remember some. I remember specifically being brought up on stage to discuss having pure relationships when going through high school. I was one of the examples, apparently, which I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah. Gotcha. I don't remember. My church didn't do a lot with purity culture. We did have one big night that was like, hey, be careful, slippery slopes. If you're going to make boundaries, you make them. If you're going to stand on the edge of a cliff, you stand back against the wall. You don't stand on the edge of it, right? So why would you do that with sex? I remember all of that. But beyond that, we didn't have a single other discussion of it.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I still have some silicone band ring that says something about purity on it somewhere.
Nice. You got a purity ring from your church?
Yeah, made out of silicone. Chris loves that.
Oh, we don't make silicone?
No, no. Chris, I think immediately after getting married, Chris, didn't you just buy a five pack of Silicone rings.
I just have one. I just bought a really expensive one. That was a really specific thing to remember, though.
It's weird how my memory works, okay?
I have silicone rings from when we got married, like beforehand. Though I don't really wear a ring at all because it kills the skin underneath it. Mm. And so it gets itchy and it sucks.
Yeah, I wore my real like metal ring for maybe a week or two. And then I had like this red rash, like a ring rash around my finger. I was like, I can't do it. And I have a silicone one, which is better, but I get it with silicone rings too,
so I don't really wear them very often. The mine's made out of wood, so it's pretty cool.
Nice. Yeah, I got like a wood inlay with like cobalt chrome or something like that. I don't know. I bought it off of Etsy.
Hey, so did I.
Do we have the same ring?
No, mine's fully wood. So.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. I've always liked earth tones more than metal, and so I thought wood would be cool.
Yeah. See how fun this is? We just get sidetracked.
Yeah.
Wherever we want to go. So we talked about...
I'm trying to think of where to go now.
Yeah. And your approach to it. So you do kind of focus more on the relationship with the students. Well, that's interesting. So do you focus more on your personal relationship with the students or the students' relationship with God? Like, is there... a priority?
I would say there is a priority. I would say it matters more the relationship with God. But acting more as like a, I guess, a mentor role. I hate calling myself that. I feel like it's a title given to somebody else, not a title that I can give to myself. But that would be more what we shoot for, is more of like a mentorship role. Like somebody you can ask questions to that you wouldn't necessarily be able to ask anybody else and get actual advice from or whatever else. But we do care more about the relationship with God, of course. We just figured that a relationship rather than teaching, a personal relationship with people rather than direct lessons is going to be a more powerful driver of that relationship with God.
I think I would probably agree with that. Like, I think most of the relationships that I had that I still like respect and appreciate were like from church and my youth pastor, and I had a good relationship with him. Mm-hmm. And as you can see, where talking about the teachers mostly on this podcast that were in our lives, it's different. Yeah, I didn't really have much of a good relationship with the teachers at that school or that were in my life, though I really liked learning the things.
I think it's interesting that I looked back, like I had good relationships with these teachers and the ones we knew personally from Hallway Digressions. But like I always looked back with like, oh yeah, they were good people. But once we started like listening to their podcast and dissecting, I think my view has changed a lot. So maybe it's better that you just don't go and look back at your old youth pastor's lessons and just like remember the relationship.
Yeah, I'll do that. I'll do that.
Well, it also depends, because like with my youth pastor, I can still look back on it and I still think like the people at my church were good people. I can like look at the lessons and stuff and find like things that I might disagree with, but I still have a lot of respect for those people and still like keep in touch every once in a while.
I find a lot of my respect for those who like were at my home church and whoever else that influenced my faith, maybe not the most positive way, is I keep in mind that their intention for me was good. They thought the best thing for me was what they taught me. And yeah, it may not have been the best in the end. I may have taken something from it that was not good, but I realized that what they were trying to do was what they thought was best. And I may not agree with what their result or what their result was for me, but I do appreciate the intention there.
It's like you listened to our podcast and heard me talk about intention and impact or something.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, because there's a line drawn for me where intention isn't good enough, where I think someone can have great intention for someone and act out of what they consider to be love. But when the impact is either harmful or doesn't have the same impact that the intention was supposed to have, and they keep doing the same things just out of intention rather than just disregarding whatever impact it has because I'm doing this because I love you, I'm doing this because whatever reason, and just continuing to keep that mindset and not adapting, I find kind of a line drawn there. Do you agree?
I can agree with that. I think there's so many different nuances to that situation because I think intentionality for me is the most important thing, but in the end, impact and frequency of the action and how long it continued to last and all that stuff matters a whole lot too. Like, you could say that an abusive spouse may love their spouse, but not realize that they're being abusive. And in the end, that doesn't change the fact that they're being abusive. I don't disagree that there is definitely, it's not just 100% intention. But I think for me to be able to, I think at times it can be a coping mechanism as well, to realize that my pastor growing up may not have been the best guy, but I can hope that his intention for me was the best, I guess. My youth pastor was great. My head pastor was not so much, but that's okay.
You grew up, I guess, Church of Christ. Like, were your parents, when they were missionaries, was it for the Church of Christ?
No. So I guess I don't really know. I kind of, but the organization we went with is an organization called Disciple Makers. I don't think they express any particular bend in denomination, though most of the head individuals there or people on the board are members of the Church of Christ movement. You could say maybe they're Church of Christ, but like, I don't think there's any, they wouldn't limit to Church of Christ by any means. What we did when we were in Honduras was we built a church building first and then two school buildings, because the school buildings brought in students to learn like well from American teachers who taught them bilingually, which set them up well for the future with business or whatever else to be able to speak English. And then that allowed for, the intention was growth from the roots of the community rather than giving them a fish instead of trying to teach them such things. They care. Oh,
biblical analogy.
Oh, I know. Isn't that crazy? It's like I grew up with pastors as my grandfather and father and uncle and so many people. But what I really appreciate, because Disciple Makers has continued to grow. So we were one of the first missionaries, because we worked with now he's the head of the, he's not CEO, like he's like the chairman of the board or whatever else. One of the first people to actually work with them to move to Honduras. But since they've grown to Nepal, Guatemala, a different place in Honduras, and a few other places. And what they do in Nepal was what I'm actually most appreciative of, is they have a school for evangelists within that teach specifically the Nepali people. So that they go and minister to themselves, because Nepal is technically a closed country. You're not really supposed to evangelize at all within Nepal. And so a random American white person walking around the country is going to have a lot more attention on them than, say, another Nepali person. And so their goal is to evangelize by building up the evangelizers rather than necessarily doing the evangelism themselves, which allows them to keep more of their faith than necessarily like, you have to teach this and have to teach this and have to teach this, and allows for a little more growth. Because what I've found with my family and with other people that I grew up with was there's a particular set of very few things that matter for Christianity, in my opinion, especially for like salvation. And so outside of that, I don't necessarily care that much. And I don't think it should be enough to cause division within the church. For me, like, I don't care about women in ministry. The Church of Christ, some places do, some places don't. It really depends on the growth or the size of the church. But like, obviously, my wife is a woman in ministry. And so she, like, I don't care about that. Or specifically with baptism, like the episode that came out most recently, the Church of Christ Church, the general idea of it is that you need to be baptized for salvation. It's an important aspect of it. It happens in most conversions within the Old Testament, and Acts in particular, or in the New Testament and Acts in particular. But my personal belief on it is that I think God's bigger than that. There are some Church of Christ churches that have their baptismals in the hallway of the, like, their small little country church, because they'd rather you be baptized on your way out the door, because if you got hit by a car without being baptized, you're going to hell. I didn't grow up within that church, but I know of churches that did. But for me, I don't really care Because I think God's bigger than that. I don't think there's a bunch of babies going to hell because they weren't able to be baptized. Like, yeah. Well, and that's, I just realized that fallacy within the Church of Christ. They're very specifically a believer's baptism. So you have to be of age to be able to understand what you're doing, which Lord knows most 9-year-olds, 10-year-olds, 11-year-olds aren't old enough to do that. But besides the point, to be able to be baptized. And so there's a lot of babies in hell, I guess, according to some of their beliefs. But
they probably have exceptions and stuff to accommodate. True. You know, you got to make people feel better.
Feel good, right?
You can interpret the Bible in some way to make it work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But yeah, so for me growing up, and from the from what I learned from the people I grew up with, specifically my parents and a few of the faith influential people in my life, that it's more important that you have some of the basics than it is that you have all of the advanced stuff. And that's what I appreciate about disciple makers, is that they aren't, at least from what I have experienced and what I've been a part of, they don't teach a particular doctrine. It's more of a how to do it than it is a doctrinal based thing.
Gotcha. And you're...
You think they'll sponsor us now?
No.
No. Disciple makers, please sponsor us.
We're kind of like we're almost like an anti-religion podcast.
Who? Sorry, I'm confused.
I want disciple makers.
Disciple makers has zero money. So that's all of their money goes out. They don't really keep any of it. So
too bad.
Unfortunately, they don't really pay for advertising. I think the only thing they really do is ICOM.
Oh, gotcha.
The International Convention of Missions or whatever.
You think we're an anti-religion podcast?
Based on what I've heard from, I guess it bases on interpretation. But I've gotten some comments that seems to be like it's being interpreted that way.
I could see the bend if you have an issue with deconstruction, which people do.
That's fair.
And like, if you don't espouse that the Bible's literal, people will say that is anti-religious at times. Having experienced that, so.
Nate, you grew up Church of Christ, and I don't know if you mentioned it here, but you attend, like your wife works at, and you attend United Methodist Church?
Yes. So my wife grew up United Methodist. And so it's kind of an easy bend for her, but also it's a growing thing now, but they used to be one of the only denominations that accept women in leadership. The tradition before was you can't teach boys older than 8 or 13, I think is the rule, because you can't teach men, because that was a Pauline thing. But that hasn't been the case for UMC for a long time. In fact, they were the first American denomination to, what's the word I'm looking for? To ordain a woman. I want to make sure of that, but they're one of the first. And so it's just an option, if that makes sense. Like personally, I don't necessarily subscribe to everything within the UMC. I'm not a member of the church, and I don't really intend to become a member of the church. For me, I don't think that we need to be so combative between denominations. I think it just creates more division when you really don't need that. But for me, I just don't really care to join a different denomination. I think I'm technically a member of Church of Christ from when I was a kid, but like, I don't care about that. I don't really intend to ever become a member of a different church. But my wife grew up UMC, and so it gives you that little bit of street cred to get a job, because it's still hard for a woman to get a job within any church. And so it was just easier to look for UMCs, but we also looked everywhere else. Just about any church that would generally accept a woman, she applied for. It was just one of the first churches that actually went the entire way with her through hiring. They had a lot of really good opportunities, but a lot of like, oh, they're actually willing to preach and all these kind of things. And my wife's like, I mean, I kind of am. Why didn't you ask? That kind of stuff.
I find it kind of interesting. This is just based on like what I know, which might not be the complete picture, but it seems like most high church settings are the ones that are more accepting.
Oh, for sure.
And I find that super weird. You would think high church would mean like more strict.
Right? No, not at all. The Episcopalian, I think, is one of the single most welcoming churches I have ever been a part of. But I go to these young upstart like Church of Christ churches and all these kind of things, and they're the worst. They're the least accepting of them. They're the like, so like Mars Hill was not necessarily accepting of every single person. Yeah, they accepted the punk, but that doesn't mean they accepted the trans individual or the right. the gay individual or anybody else. But one of my friends is a really like a pastor at an Episcopalian church, and it's one of the single loveliest places I've ever been. Presbyterians are generally pretty open to it. UMC is pretty open to it. So it's just like, well, actually, I say UMC is pretty open to it, but currently they're going through a schism because of...
Currently? I thought that was over.
Well, no.
I thought they already separated. It was like the Global Methodist Church or something.
They did separate, but technically they weren't supposed to until 2024 when they were going to have another general conference on it. And so there's still possibilities of that sort of schism happening. But yeah, so I can say UMC is accepting, but I mean, they kind of are more now since the globalist church is kind of leaving. So
yeah,
win. That's a win for the UMC.
There you go. You get to keep the name too.
Yeah.
I count that as a win. If someone's leaving, then you win.
Agreed.
I'd say some Lutheran churches too are very accepting too.
It's weird that high churches, like you would, yeah, I agree with you. With how heavy they are on tradition, you would think that they are more not accepting. Though, how accepting is the Catholic Church, the original high church?
Right. Yeah, that's true. Maybe that's where we're getting that kind of bias from, is just from Catholicism.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe
I should explain high church for people that don't necessarily know what we mean when we say high church. So that term, I don't know if it's more academic or if it's used in other churches. I didn't hear it in church at all, but I heard it in school. And that is high church kind of means more, I'm going to have to explain another word. So high church is churches that are more liturgical, which is liturgy just has to do with like the practice, rituals, different like steps that are involved, I guess, like that have been passed down almost through a long time. So that's where like Catholicism is high church, because they have a lot of rituals, a lot of call response type things within their liturgy. Their church almost goes through like everyone knows what to expect when they're going through it. And where like low church would be like what I grew up with, which is you have announcements, you have music, then you have a sermon, then you're done. Like those are the three aspects. High church has a bit more to it, where they have different things that are honestly kind of intimidating when you don't know what you're doing in them.
Absolutely.
Like I remember attending, I think I went to a Methodist church in college at one point. And what's the saying that people always use? I don't know if it's United Methodist or it's just a general thing that I never grew up which was,
is it peace be with you?
And yeah, I'll speak to you? Yeah, I think that's the one.
Peace be with you. And then the response is, and with you, and also with you, or whatever it is.
Yeah. And some people just shorten it and go peace.
Yep.
And you just,
I've been to a few different situations with that. So like our church in particular is there is a traditional service and then a modern service. I usually don't get to go into the traditional service because that's when their Sunday school is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in with my wife teaching Sunday school. So but their traditional service, he wears the traditional vestments, the garb. Makes him look like a priest, but during the modern service he doesn't. He's an older gentleman, so he still wears his like his suit and whatever else, but he doesn't have to. And they sing more hymns during the traditional service than they would in the modern service and all that kind of fun stuff. But yeah, a lot of the evangelical churches, I would say, well, no, I can't say that. That's not a good
or say they're
more low church, but that's not, I wouldn't
it's a generalization.
Say they necessarily are. Yeah. Yeah, the evangelical churches that you tend to hear more often, hear more about, tend to be the low church places.
Yeah, and when saying low church, that's not like an insult or anything. It's just like terminology that's used to describe stuff. So
yeah,
no one get angry about us using low church and high church. It's just a technical specification.
I wonder if originally it was intended to be an insult.
I hope not.
I don't know. There's a lot of petty people in church history. So
that's true. So yeah, within like the modern services, do they still have a lot of the liturgy, or is it more like the evangelical like churches?
It's a lot more like evangelical churches. Gotcha. He preaches about what he wants to preach. It's not like the Catholic Church where every week is based off of something. from their, I forget the name of the book, but it feels a lot more like a growing at like the Church of Christ or what County Line is, I would guess.
Yeah.
Where else?
Which there's something to be said about like holding on to traditions. I know like non-denominational kind of like went away from that because they wanted freedom to like let the spirit lead, I think is like the terminology that they use. But there's something really beautiful about a group of, not just a group of people, but groups of people over time, like saying the same types of prayers and doing the same types of things. I always found really cool that I didn't get to grow up with. So like one of the books that I got most invested in, I think in college was the Book of Common Prayer. Cause that was like a foreign thing to me. And then I started like saying prayers that people had been saying for years, decades, who knows how long.
There's absolutely a beauty to that. It becomes a culture in itself. Where you find your little, I don't know, I sometimes will feel safer within those situations because, I mean, we as humans love tradition and consistency and patterns and whatever else. And high churches are more adapted to that than most.
Yeah. One of the professors I like connected with the most in college was also more of like a introvert, like maybe social anxiety type of person. And I was talking about how like I was planning to go into ministry, but I hated public prayer. Like I hated public prayer. Like, and going to school for Bible and religion, you tend to have a lot of people ask you to pray because they're like, you're going to school for Bible. Will you pray for us?
And it's like, you know how to pray. Boy.
So she had suggested what she does, which is she memorized the prayer of Thanksgiving from the Book of Common Prayer. And that's just the prayer that she used whenever people asked her to pray.
I respect that. That is a great idea.
It makes it way easier. Coming up with stuff on the spot was always such an anxiety-induced experience growing up for me. I hated it so much. And my family was the type that would be like, like, I almost dreaded dinner sometimes because when I was younger, we'd come to dinner and my dad would ask one of us kids to like pray for the meal, and you never know who he was gonna ask. So in my head I'm just like, please don't ask me to pray.
Please don't.
Like, Ryan, you want to pray? It's like, yeah, I'll pray.
You can't say no.
No, you can't be like, I don't want to pray.
It's not an option.
Yeah, and there's a lot of stuff that I like, I wouldn't necessarily say I'm a Christian anymore, but there's a lot of stuff that I took from my experience within Christianity and just like from college. I connected a lot with professors at my school, and my school is more of like a progressive theology department. Like the Christian culture there was not. It was very conservative Christian culture, which was really interesting because the theology department was very progressive in their teachings. And there's a lot of stuff that I took that I like even prayer, like I wouldn't call it prayer anymore, but the way I used to pray, I now use as like meditation.
I fully agree with you. Yeah. I went to a class at one point at ICOM that was about, I took it because I wanted to see how funny it was. It was about how yoga and other Eastern practices are bringing the devil to the United States.
Yeah.
And it was the worst theology I ever realized. And then I found out that the people who taught the class are actually really good friends with somebody I'm related to. So I was like, oh, no. But how like the I never really took yoga, so I don't remember all the different poses, but like praising the sun, I know is actually soulsborne, but hey. it's a similar thing, but I don't remember it. Yeah, but like calling the devil down your spine or something, like it was just super dumb.
Yeah, it was always like, did you grow up kind of with like a theology of fear, would you say? Like, I would say I grew up with a theology of fear where everything, when it comes to like almost when I say conservative, almost like I relate to this theology of fear. Like, you got to be careful. You got to be always worried about what you're taking in because it can affect you, type of thing. Did you have that?
I would say my church was like that. My parents weren't. And my parents were a lot more of an influence on my Christian faith than the church was. But I remember being in a musical for the church where one of the songs was, I only remember like the chorus. It was like input, output. What comes in is what comes out.
Yeah.
And it's all about like music and like bad words and all this kind of stuff. And I realized like that is definitely a fear culture idea, but my parents never really did that. My dad listened to classic rock for the entirety of my growing up years, and my grandmother was scared of stuff. She got fully sucked into the satanic panic times, but yeah. my dad kind of fought that a little bit. And I mean,
good to hear.
Having heard some of the experiences of my dad and whatever else, like I don't know my personal beliefs about spiritual warfare aspects of things. I'm very much like, I don't know. But my dad's told stories about times he's been a part of an exorcism and things like that. And those are kind of terrifying. But my dad always made sure to highlight the fact that my faith in a way protects me, and my God is more powerful than the things happening there and all that kind of stuff. And so they always taught a very like more of a courage aspect of it, or a standing up to it. Or they've encouraged me to deconstruct at times, to ask me hard questions that I wouldn't have asked myself otherwise, or be there for me to ask them questions. And so I'm very, very lucky to have the healthy parent theology times that I've had. Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. Plus, it probably is beneficial that your parent, were they both pastors? Or just your dad?
Technically, it was just my dad. But I mean, the role that the pastor's wife fills is so extensive. Yeah. It feels like she also was too.
Yeah. So they were probably more confident in their own faith that they were willing to do that for you. I would say there's probably a lot of parents that aren't as confident in their faith, and so they're almost worried about questions or questioning of anything in there. And so,
I mean, my parents went to a foreign country with no exit plan to preach about God. So like, I feel like there's a level to like, you have to have some faith and some confidence in yourself. Otherwise, there's no way. And they actually talk about that. Their first year abroad was some of the hardest times in their marriage, in our family life, and in their faith. Because, I mean, it's terrifying. Being away from home, your safety nets of your family, your friends, any of those people. And then not even, they spoke the language, of course, but like, it's not your language. It's not what you're used to. The music on the radio is not what you're used to. The people around you aren't speaking your natural tongue. Like there's a lot of things that that culture shock hits hard, but then it hits harder if you don't have a plan to get home. If you didn't buy a ticket on a plane to get home, like it hits a little bit harder because you're kind of just dove into the deep end. And they talk about how that strengthened them more than it broke them down, but they realize how difficult it was for that to be the case. So I tend to laugh at I'm too judgmental of young missionaries coming out of college. Like, especially because I went to school with them, and like I'm like, oh, I want to see this happen. Like, I don't know how well this is gonna work out.
Yeah, I knew some people. There was one person that was from my church that was, I kind of looked up to because like he was younger, you know, like you tend to look up to someone who's closer to your age for some reason. But he went and started, I don't know if he started or like just became very involved in some water filtration service in somewhere in Africa, I think.
That's awesome.
But yeah, and he like dropped everything and just like moved there and married, I think, his wife there too.
That's intense.
But like it takes some guts to up and move to a whole different continent. I was going to say, though, it's kind of looking pretty appealing to move to a different continent.
a different continent, but maybe not for that reason, because I agree with you. I wouldn't mind.
Oh, man. So I'm just curious, and I want to see how you would put yourself. So let's say there's like a spectrum of Christianity, and like I don't like making it dualistic, but just for the sake of this question.
Okay.
Let's say conservative is like on one side and progressive is on the other. Like that's the spectrum. Where would you place yourself on there?
I would very much be on the progressive side of it. It was like, okay, that's a weird question a little bit, because there's a level I could ask. Is it like, are you talking theology wise or interpretations of the Bible wise? Or
I tend to think those are kind of linked, because if you interpret the Bible in a certain way, it's going to affect your own theology.
That's valid. I think when I explained myself, it was confusing. So for me, I take a very conservative view with translation of the Bible. Sure. Because I took Hebrew in college, and so I'm particular about that. But when it comes to actual theology points, I'm very much on the progressive side. I mean, it's kind of hard not to be, considering my wife's and I's lifestyle. She's a woman who is in a church leadership role at the church she's in. She's technically the family minister. Not just the youth minister, but her main job is youth ministry. And she is demisexual. I am ace, and which, I mean, neither of these things are really against the Bible in all reality. It's, I guess with demi, it can be, because it tends to lean more towards like the bisexual range than it does straight, because of the whole, that's a long discussion.
we don't have to get, people can look up.
Don't have to get to that. Yeah,
look up demisexual if you want to learn about that.
Yes. So and so we kind of have to lean that way. I tend to lean on a more progressive view of like creation, especially with how, I mean, all of my opinions I don't hold that strongly to. Like, I have opinions, but they're not necessarily things that I would teach others on, or like, this is absolute truth.
Yeah,
because I hate that idea. Obviously, I've talked about that previously, but for me, I definitely on the progressive side, for sure.
How do you feel about most used English translations of the Bible?
It heavily depends on their purpose.
Like, how do you feel about, like, NIV is what I grew up with. Do you like the ARV Bible?
Isn't that bad, especially after some of its revisions. There's issues with it, because I mean, we didn't add homosexual to the Bible until the early 1900s or mid 1900s.
Yeah.
So like, there are aspects to it that are obviously issues, but my problem would more lie on, what is the point of your reading? Like, am I wanting to make it understandable for kids? Then I don't really mind the message, certain portions of the message. I'm not going to read it for study. My personal choice is typically the ESV or the NASB, just because they tend to be more word for word translations rather than idea for idea translations.
Yeah,
because I don't think it's a great idea to pretend that we know what the biblical authors were thinking. Like, there's a level to like, yeah, that's how we should interpret, but I don't think it can be done for the sake of everybody else to read it, if that makes sense. I'd rather it be done more literally so that I can make that interpretation, rather than for somebody else to make that interpretation for me, like homosexual.
Yeah, because for people that don't know, there's a lot of assumptions that are made when translating the Bible, because you got to think, people that wrote this thing were from a long lost culture that we can't understand. And so there's a lot of assumptions that have to be made about that culture and about what those people were going through, like the environment. If you don't know, environment has a big impact on culture. And so,
I mean, a culture that changed massively over time too, over centuries.
So it's much more complex than I think people realize.
Absolutely. It took me learning Hebrew and getting more into the Old Testament to have a lot more. I mean, I always respected the Jewish culture and the Jewish people, but like, I have a lot more respect for them than I ever did previously.
Same.
And I heavily appreciate that whole culture and the beliefs around it. I've always wanted to celebrate Passover, but I've never gotten the opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that I never practiced growing up either. Like, it wasn't until college that I first practiced Lent. Like,
yeah.
Didn't even know really what that was. There were so many different things that happened in college. I was like, huh, Christianity can be very different than the one I grew up with.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Especially like Messianic Judaism. It's really not that different. You just like you just practice the Jewish culture while believing in Jesus.
So everyone knows, there's stuff to gain from everyone, no matter if you disagree with them. Like, you can gain something, you can learn something from everything.
Like understanding the roots between Islam and Christianity or all of those different things.
Yeah. Doesn't always have to be defensive. There's stuff to learn.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It feels like a subtext to our last episode. If you want to learn more about that, see episode 5.
What's funny is I never actually listened to that half. So I only know about the subject. I don't know what actually was discussed.
Oh.
But
that's actually really funny because you just nailed it. Like,
yep. Yeah. Because you probably would know more about it too. So you took a bunch of Hebrew. I took like 3 semesters of Hebrew and then took like 3 years of Greek. I went the other route.
I took 2 years. So 4 total semesters. I think 2. Yeah. 4 total semesters. We started with, I think, a class of like 13. I ended the class with 2. There was one other person with me.
Yeah, that makes sense. My last
the single class hardest class I ever took. The single hardest education thing I've ever done was Hebrew.
Yeah, and I found Greek much easier. Sorry.
I mean, it makes sense. It serves as some of the basis for our current language versus Hebrew does not. Lord, it does not.
And honestly, the characters are harder than Greek characters.
Absolutely. And you have to, well, if you're writing them correctly, you're writing them from right to left. And now we understand the issue with everybody who is left-handed and getting stuff on their hands as they write. And I'm sorry.
Oh, I just got the like Hebrew keyboard on my computer and would type up everything.
Yeah. Yeah. We did a lot more paperwork than we did type stuff.
Yeah. I did like all of my homework on a computer.
That's nice. That's nice. I loved my Hebrew class. I loved it. I struggled massively through it, and I appreciate that because it taught a lot of perseverance aspects. I mean, once you get that, so literally it was 3 people after the first semester, after like the first couple weeks of the first semester, actually. And then after that, it was 2 people that went on to the second year. And I was like, well, I can't leave this guy now. Like, I'm in it now. Like, I didn't even need the class anymore. I could have tested out with Spanish way earlier, but I was like, I'm going to learn this. But I'm happy I actually stuck with it because it.
Are you still doing any translating?
Not really. When I read, I like to read out of my, I have an interlinear for the Old Testament that I like to read out of. It's an ESV and Hebrew interlinear, but for the most part I'm not necessarily doing a lot of like actual translation.
Gotcha.
That kind of got beat out of me during that my 25 page paper about one particular chapter.
Yuck.
Yeah, I did that in like 3 days and I hated myself the entire time.
Funny story, part of the catalyst for me switching to a Bible and religion degree was I was at Purdue studying electrical engineering and I needed some sort of elective, and there was an actual biblical Hebrew course at Purdue, and I was like, that sounds fun. Who people make fun of me for choosing that as like an elective course?
I got made fun of for it. And I went to a Bible college.
What the hell, guys, come on. But yeah, I took that Hebrew course and really enjoyed it, and that was part of the switch over to Bible and religion, going back to, well, not back, but going to Anderson.
Mm-hmm. It's probably one of the things that I'm most proud of in the end is being able to say, and then like it's influenced my perspective on the Bible and all that kind of thing. Like for me, I'm gonna bring up a very fun topic. For me, Genesis 1 is poetry, and poetry written for people who weren't necessarily looking for a science book. So do I think it needs to be literal? No. I know. I don't think it needs to be literal, but I don't necessarily think it needs to be that far off either. Does that make sense? Like, I think of it as more of like a figurative metaphor than anything. And I mean, here's a quick lesson. The word for day in Hebrew doesn't necessarily mean 24 hours. It can mean age epoch or anything. So let's just take that and then extrapolate from there.
And that's how you get Christians that believe in old earth.
Yeah, that's my personal leaning.
Yeah.
And secondarily, I think if God created and God is God, then eventually science should grow to agree with him rather than disagree.
You would think.
Because God created it, so why wouldn't it? And like, I find at times there is reassurance in science and all that kind of stuff for me. And so recognizing that God that Satan didn't put dinosaur bones in the ground. That's not what happened. Come on. Like, or I remember espousing in high school being like, there's a mountain in France that if you carbon date it, it's actually upside down. I remember saying that kind of stuff. And now I'm like, I'm kind of mad at myself for just bringing these random things up. I'm like, yeah, actually carbon dating is total crap.
Didn't we used to have when I came to Leo, didn't we have little debates over stuff like this?
Every once in a while.
I remember getting in a baptism debate.
I remember that too, actually. And yeah, I'm so sorry for that argument I had with you.
I enjoyed it.
It's fun. It was always fun.
It was fun. I was never mad. I just remember like, oh, our little brainwashed selves fighting over different biblical traditions that we had no clue about. And honestly, I still don't know everything about.
Speaking of apologizing for things, I still have a vivid memory that I will now apologize for. We were really into that whole thing where you hit your knee into the back of someone else's knee to make them like collapse.
Yeah.
I remember doing that to you, Nate, and you getting very upset about it.
Yeah,
I felt very bad.
I was a very self-conscious kid. I remember playing soccer with you, Ryan. And unfortunately, you were very good at soccer and one of the few that actually was better in gym class. And I remember playing against you and you kept scoring. So eventually you fouled and I kicked it directly at you.
I did.
Like hard.
I don't remember that one.
I hit you in the back. That's it.
Awesome. I deserved it. People always got angry at me because they said I tried too hard in gym class. But I found that if I didn't try, it wasn't fun.
I fully agree with you. And I wasn't good at everything. I just tried.
Yeah. Oh, man.
You got mad in a liquid gym class one time.
Oh, yeah, I did. I put a dude on the ground.
Oh, goodness.
I didn't, punch him, but it was more like a tripping thing. Like, I pulled him back and over my leg, to put him on the ground and then stormed out of the gym class.
Oh, goodness gracious.
And then I didn't get sent to the principal or anything. The gym teacher came in and was just like, yeah, I heard about what happened. He's like, I'll tell you what, just apologize to the class and you'll be good. And I was like, okay.
Not to the kid, to the whole class.
No, yeah, for disrupting the whole thing, yeah.
Yeah, not for throwing the kid on the ground.
Yeah, no, he deserved it. I don't feel bad about that one.
He did deserve it.
I'm sure you were in the right.
No one's right or wrong.
No.
I don't feel bad about it.
There you go. You don't need to apologize to him now like you needed to when you hit me in the back of the knee.
I felt very bad about that one. After I got the impact of my actions, I was like, oh.
I don't even know why I would have reacted fun strongly.
Because it probably hurt. I was kind of an aggressive person.
You honestly probably hurt my pride more than anything because there was a very particular girl I wanted to impress. And getting hit in the back of the knee was not going to work.
Yeah. Because I think it almost made you collapse on the ground.
It very well could have. Yeah.
I don't remember it at all.
Like, not even a little bit.
It's pretty vivid in my memory. Yeah. I must be very good. But you can't apologize. That's also a hurt to your pride. I can't apologize to people.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm just gonna get you back. I'm gonna find you and then hit you in the back of the knee. Blow out your knee.
Do it. Was that also the year that I was doing the whole pulling up someone's foot by putting my foot under their foot, from behind?
Probably.
Did I do that to you guys?
I remember doing it. So
I don't know. This stuff for some reason.
You liked messing with people walking.
I really liked messing with people.
If we're apologizing to people now, I'm going to apologize to Chris because I hit him in the back of the knee so hard he did fall once. So Chris, not Chris Thurber. Sorry. Not this Chris.
I know it's
different Chris.
Yeah.
And I feel bad for that. Sorry, Chris.
Ryan's hit me in the throat a couple times and has never apologized. So
no.
You should feel lucky that he apologized to you, Nate.
Apologize to Chris. Chris deserves everything that's coming to him.
I feel like Ryan was, it was pretty mean to all of us geeky kids.
I was, because like I was kind of like a geeky kid. Like I was into all of the geeky stuff.
Yeah, but you were actually athletic. Yeah.
And so I would use that against everyone else. Yeah, I was
hanging out with all the geeks, and then you were actually athletic and cool. I see how it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Best of both worlds, because the geeky stuff is way more fun. And I can just do, I could just go play sports if I wanted to, which I did jump out of soccer my senior year. I was like, I'm done with this. People took it too seriously.
High school seniors took it too seriously. Really?
Yeah, because they were all looking like, my reasoning was like, they're looking for like recruiters college. And stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. College. And it's like, I'm not going to take this seriously enough to like make our team look the best it can be. Like, I don't care about how our team looks.
Yeah. So it's both a noble thing and then,
and also selfish. Like, I just don't want to play with these guys anymore.
Yeah. I get that. I quit soccer in going into freshman year, I think. No, eighth grade year, because I was short, fat, and slow. So. It was probably the best idea for me at the time.
I didn't hit the opposite.
Yeah, Chris was tiny.
Chris was a little twig.
I never really changed, so I guess I'm not short as much anymore, but I'll keep the rest of it.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, Chris played soccer freshman year with us.
I didn't know that.
And Chris hated it.
You guys took
all time.
Took it real easy. You guys took.
See, that's what people say. But like, you have to play hard to have fun. But there are some people that like got angry if you did stuff wrong, and that's where I was like, I want a good game. So it's like I want you to be capable. But like, if people are yelling at me for like not guarding the guy well enough, and it's like I don't really care
that much anymore. Yep, I get that completely.
Yeah, I think it was a whole like moving to a new school kind of thing too, right? Like I didn't know anyone. People were yelling at me.
Oh, and I was a dick to Chris when he moved over to Lakewood.
I was gonna say, I'm sorry, Chris, because we all made fun of you for following Ryan. So sorry.
Yeah. Not wrong though.
He followed me all the way to Lake. And then I told him you need to make your own friends. And just did not.
That.
Yeah. Yep. I was not a part of introducing him to people at all.
Yeah, you took a guppy along with you and then just threw him to the sharks, man. Like
he came out well, okay? He made friends. He made the same friends that I had anyways.
There was like a certain amount of people to make friends with, man.
In a class
of 40, not many.
There's not many of them.
Yeah, that's true. My wife graduated with 36, so she's got you beat.
Oh.
And I graduated with 250 something, I think.
And even that's kind of small compared to some other people.
That's tiny compared to like some places in Cincinnati or Indy for that matter.
I was curious if you could kind of talk a little bit about how you viewed the Bible growing up versus how you view the Bible now. Because you've talked a little bit about your upbringing and you've talked a little bit now, and you seem to still have a lot of reverence to the Bible, much more than I think Ryan and I have. So I was just curious if you kind of talk about differences and the similarities that you've kept.
That's a good question. So for me growing up, there is a reverence for the Bible, but I don't really remember ever studying it. I didn't go to a school that made me study it, so I didn't when I was growing up for the most part. I hit more when I went to college, and I really appreciate my college because I went through an Old Testament and a New Testament several years of both of those classes that made sure I actually knew the story of the Bible, like the overarching narrative of it. Like I knew most of the stories within it, and I knew most of what people will pull from. I learned so many different things about Judges and all of these other places that were just never talked about. And I found, for me now, looking at the Bible, I think there is a lot of beauty within its pages, but there is a lot of other things too. You can look at the Old Testament and see all of the different pages in which God asked for destruction upon peoples that were not his chosen people, and that feels awful to see. But with my education, I also learned that in every single time where an outsider was trying to pursue God, he worked with them. He incorporated them into his people. He incorporated them into his promise, and many times into the line of his eventual son, or so on. And so realizing that we maybe aren't getting the other stories because they aren't a part of the narrative that the Israelites wanted to tell. The Israelites wanted to show that they were a strong people and a conquering people, and they were using the same sorts of characteristics that the other cultures did in that time, which I don't necessarily think that God wanted per se either. But I also believe that he brought in Rahab, he brought in Naomi and Ruth. He brought in so many different characters that would never have been a part of his promise to eventually be in the line of Jesus in the long term. And so you can't take the Bible and just look at the parts that are fun to see and the all of the interesting stories, or just knowing that Jesus walked on water and fed many people once with so little food. You need to look at everything else to understand the story of the people who wrote it. You need to realize that David more than likely absolutely did rape Bathsheba and all of these terrible things, and recognizing that David was not a good person a lot of his life, but also recognizing that there was still God still pursued David, and David still somewhat pursued God until the end. He didn't sleep with that young woman that they tried to put next to him. So that's a good sign, but it's progress. No, I to me, looking at the Bible, I see it as a place that I can pull some really interesting stories and some really interesting things and try to understand the peoples at the time that were writing them and all these kind of things, and recognize that there is always nuance to what we are teaching. I think we need to take a better, more centralized view of the Bible than the hyper conservative everything is literal and the hyper liberal everything is not possibly literal, or that everything can be bent to our desires. I think we need to let it inform where it feels informed, and let, in my opinion, let God lead you to that information rather than try to find it myself.
Do you do any teaching, like when you volunteer?
On occasion I will. I'll sub in for when my wife is sick or she has to be doing something else. But a lot of my like discussions with the kids tend to be a little more personal than like absolute teachings. And for the most part, my wife and I are very intentional in keeping our personal opinions out of the teaching itself. So like I would never espouse to our students that old earth creationism is the only way that it could possibly be. Because I don't necessarily want to alienate anybody. I don't want to have a theological discussion with somebody who is not as educated as I am, because I don't want to influence them in a way that isn't necessary. I'd rather them have the beliefs they have and eventually grow to mature in them, or maybe find something different or whatever else, than espouse something I think is right when I could very, very easily be wrong.
Interesting. If you're going sitting down and you open your Bible to have a personal study, what does that look like to you? Like, how does it feel?
A lot of times when I'm opening up the Bible, I'm looking to find some passage I found meaning in previously or whatever else. Like for me, a really important passage falls more under meditation than anything else, but is the Shema in Deuteronomy. Mm-hmm. In fact, I have Shema tattooed on my forearm. And so it's the same repetition of that over and over again is a very nice way to clear my head, but also kind of recenter a little bit. And I take comfort in the fact that this has been a tradition for many, many centuries and millennia at this point, for people to recite this over and over and over and over again. And I find comfort in taking part of that. Just like I think I find comfort in reading a rosary or praying a rosary. I don't, but I feel like I would.
Do you want to explain what the Shema is?
Yeah. So the way I tend to explain it is that it's the John 3:16 of the Jews.
Sure.
But it's the listen, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your... I forget. It's different technically in the Old Testament than it is right how we usually say it. And I say it in Hebrew more often than I say it in English. Shema Yisrael Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad. It's the first line of it. But we did like the first several verses, but I don't want to offend anybody with my white tongue and bad pronunciation.
Yeah, geez. Assimilating another culture. Unbelievable.
Right? I know. How dare I? But I love the Shema because of its, it feels like a meditation, honestly. Like, it feels like I can recenter a lot better under that than I would under other things. There's better options.
Yeah. One thing that I took away that I really liked, I like haven't done forever because it involves a labyrinth.
Okay.
Have you heard about like walking the labyrinth?
No.
So my school had one. Oh man, if I'm going to talk about this, we're going to have to include an image, Chris, or something, which I'll find. Yeah. I'll actually post it in the general chat in this Discord too. But it was, so there's a difference between, I think people have a misunderstanding of what a labyrinth is versus a maze. So mazes have dead ends, labyrinths do not, besides it leading to like the center. So it would be like this big circle almost with a path going through it. But basically it's one singular path that you walk, and basically people would pray or meditate and you'd walk through this. So your body knows what it's doing. And you're supposed to kind of go into a meditative state. And as you go closer to the center, you're supposed to like visualize almost that you're getting closer to God in a sense, where like you're shedding everything that's going on in your life, basically, and trying to become one with God. And as you get closer to the center, you're getting closer and closer. And then you spend time there in the center and then you walk back out the same way you came in. And
that's a good idea.
This was the practice that I really enjoyed. We had this design outside, like on concrete, like they put it in the middle of like trees and stuff. And in my spiritual formation class, each morning we'd go and walk the labyrinth before class. And I would still do that like outside of that class. But now I like, that is a very specific thing that you need in order to practice. And those are not easily found.
No, not really.
It's like, there's something about like, since it's only one path, you don't have to think about it, but you get to like move through it and you're like making this whole journey. It's basically the idea of pilgrimage in a small form factor.
I really like that. That's really cool.
Me too. But I have not been able to do it in so long. It was so fun. Chris, I think I already told you about that when I was like going to school.
There's one actually just down the street from me. I've walked it probably half a dozen,
right?
Dozen
Isn't
times.
It nice? There's something about it. I guess you have to be in the mindset for it, though.
You definitely have to be in a mindset for it. I think it's difficult the first couple of times to, like, understand what you're doing.
Oh, yeah.
Too.
Yeah,
it definitely feels, it takes practice. Yeah, it feels awkward. I've never been, like, a really spiritual person. Like, spiritual practices. It was definitely a nice practice.
Yeah, so,
I enjoyed it.
Nate, if you ever find a labyrinth around you, they're usually in... big cathedrals most of the time. Okay. Now
I'm sure there's one
give
in Cincinnati.
Give it a try. Find one. Do it. Yeah. Look up some like writings people have written about it and different stuff. And it there were like almost like meditations that you would go through just to get into this space. It was very. Yeah. It's probably the most peaceful I've felt was walking in a labyrinth.
Gotcha. I'll have to keep that in mind. That sounds really cool. I did find, I pulled out my Bible for Deuteronomy 6:4 if you want me to actually read it rather than try to bring it from memory.
Sure.
Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. And these words that I command you, you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children and shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. The reason why I have Shema on my forearm, it's technically right below my elbow, is because the word for hand is technically your whole forearm in Hebrew, and so I wanted to bind it on my hand but at the same time make it so that I could hide it under a sleeve if I needed to, and so that's where I got it tattooed. And part of that too is when I got it tattooed, I wanted to be a counselor but also just in general practice. The word Shema just means it's the command form of listen. And so it's a reminder to listen, and I wrote it towards myself rather than towards other people because most people can't read Hebrew anyway. And so it's nice to be able to have that reminder.
In your Hebrew class, did you hear where the word Jehovah came from?
I love that.
That's one of my favorite
fact to tell people. And that Jehovah is not a word.
Yeah, Jehovah is kind of made up. Oh, in Hebrew, there's the characters are only consonants, right? And so there's, I think to make it easier on us, I don't think they had vowel points in the past, but I think that was a later addition, right?
The Masoretes added it later on.
Right. So now, like when you're learning Hebrew, they put different dots and notations to say which vowels go in between each consonant. And in the Bible, what we translate, I believe, as I am, or like whatever the Lord's name, they took that. And then the word Adonai, which is just basically like Lord, which I think some people know like Adonai, but it could be used for just like a normal Lord, like as a title. But they took the vowel points from Adonai, put it on God's name, and it says Jehovah. Did I get that
right? The intention being, yes, you did. The intention being so that you don't say the Lord's name in vain. You say Adonai when you're reading over it rather than whatever the actual tetragrammaton is. The four consonants that make up God's name. So when they're reading, they aren't potentially saying his name in vain. And so, yes, it would be pronounced similar to Jehovah. And so my favorite line is it Days of Elijah? My Hebrew teacher likes to sing, instead of there's no God like Jehovah, he likes to sing there's no God named Jehovah over and over and over and over again.
Hilarious. Great joke.
Perfect.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, so now everyone knows where Jehovah came from. Yeah, because like our best guess, like since I don't care that much and a lot of people don't care that much anymore, like we're saying
Yahweh.
Yeah. Right? Those are the same characters, the Tetragrammaton or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Those are the same four characters that also can be pronounced Jehovah, because for some reason the Y and the J's are like almost the same in Hebrew. I don't get it.
Well, it'd be like Yehovah.
Yeah,
not Jehovah, but we like to Englishize.
We like to translate it with J's. Like they didn't really have J's, I don't think, in there.
It's like Jesus would be, if now would be similar to Josh. So
yeah, I hated reading Hebrew with all the gutturals.
Mm-hmm.
No fun.
I think it's fun. It's it's not great when you're congested, but
I would imagine.
But yeah, our closest approximation is Yahweh when we don't actually know the true way it would have been pronounced.
Right. Because if it was oral tradition and they weren't willing to say God's name, what are you going to do?
Did you know that the reason why we call bears bears is because of a very similar thing?
No.
I believe it's a Germanic origin, but bear translate to something similar to like, I forget what it is, but the true name of bear they wouldn't say because saying it would call it in their opinion, in their like beliefs then. So it's similar as to like he who must not be named in Harry Potter.
Yeah.
The episode of SpongeBob with the sea bear and they have the circles and stuff. It's the same thing. Classic episode.
All right. Is there anything else that you have, Chris? I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I had thought of something earlier, but it's gone from my mind.
I mean, I can go on for a long time.
You can't, but 10 is my cutoff. Once we hit that, it's just like, I'm done.
I think that's fantastic. I'm really glad you reached out, Nate.
Yeah, too. I was interested because I saw a post from Ryan talking about it. And I was like, I'll listen to it. I mean, I've listened to podcasts forever. Like, do you know the podcast Lore? I've been listening to it since he was on his 9th episode.
Oh, yeah, really?
I found it on accident because I was looking for a podcast about folklore, and he was on his 9th episode when I started listening to it. I haven't really kept up with it, but he's past, I think, 200 at this point and had an Amazon TV show. Like,
yeah.
He did pretty well.
Aaron Mankey, right?
Yep.
Aaron Mankey's fantastic.
I've been listening to podcasts for a very long time at this point. Well over it.
Listen to his other show.
He has so many of them. But no, not really. I haven't listened to many of them in a long time. Yeah.
That wasn't a fair description.
But no, I haven't really listened to like any of Aaron Mankey stuff for a while just because I needed something lighter sometimes. At this point, I drive so much for my job that I just listen to podcasts the whole time. So you guys have entered my rotation. So
awesome. We appreciate that. Is there any closing words you want to say to plug anything? I don't know.
I don't do anything.
Yeah, cool.
You didn't ask me what my bright spot was, but that's okay. Whatever.
That's true. We haven't been doing bright spots with the people we bring on.
We don't do that. We should mix that in more.
People tend to like it.
It's a nice way to get to know your hosts. Just saying. I didn't know you had cats, but now I know you like to carry them in backpacks. So.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You can say your bright spot to end it all if you want.
It's going to take me a bit to get to the bright aspect of it. So my grandmother passed away last Sunday, or Sunday before last.
I'm sorry.
I appreciate it. She has been dealing with pancreatic cancer for over 3 years now. And so there is a bright spot in that she is no longer having to deal with that. And I am happy for that. Sorry to bring that to a damper, but.
No, it's okay. My grandpa passed away last year from cancer as well. So it's a conflicting time. Like cancer
bitch. Sucks.
Yeah. So I'm also, that was the same feelings I had when he passed. He got a lot more years than we should have. Him, which I'm very appreciative of.
Same with my grandmother. She went into remission at one point, but then it came back. And when it comes back, that means it's not going to go away this time, usually. And so we were given a year as the longest. Mm. And she went just a little bit longer than that. But yeah, most of the time with pancreatic cancer, you don't live very long after diagnosis. So I'm very blessed.
Yeah, I'm glad you got those experiences then at the end there.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks, Nate, for coming on our show and having a great discussion with us. Honestly, we honestly didn't really know what to expect going into this because we haven't really talked to you in a while. But this was a great conversation. It was awesome getting to catch up with you. So thanks very much for coming on.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, really appreciate it. I'm glad you reached out. Also enjoyed the conversation a lot, and maybe we'll see more of you later. Ooh. A little teaser there.
Until next time. This is Hallway Transgressions.
Bye, and we love Satan. You.
Well, it's definitely not a Bible podcast anymore.
I've been saying Hail Satan at the end of all of them, and Chris edits them out.
I don't know, but that's funny.
I totally edit them out.